Welcome to the L&R Communications podcast series. Today, we have the special pleasure of speaking with one of the smartest people we know in digital marketing, and that's Mr. Toby Bray. And Toby is currently a sales and marketing advisor for the OBO agency. And Toby has been kind enough to speak with us today about marketing strategy, being the wise sage that he is, and how to best tie marketing into sales. And Toby, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Matt. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. It's great to speak with you. And frankly, I always enjoy speaking with you. I always feel like I learned something when you and I talk. It could be anything from music to digital marketing and anything under the sun. You always have great insights to share. So along those lines, before we really kick it off, tell our listeners a bit about yourself and your background.
So I'm a hybrid of sorts, Matt. I've worked in startups, both successful and successful at failing. And the reason why I say successful at failing is that I think it's important to learn from your failures. Mid-sized firms and companies in the Fortune 100 in roles that include user experience, sales, marketing, operations, and project management. And I've also worked in radio, and I think radio contributes a great deal to the understanding of user experience and how important it is to understand essentially who your target is and how you attract them and sell to them.
Oh, that's great. Great input there. And, you know, one of the things that I've noticed over the years, and we've been collaborating on stuff for, gosh, maybe 10 years now, is that you really do excel at marketing strategy. And I feel like you always have your finger on the pulse of trends that impact marketing today. How do you do this? How do you get these insights?
I think the most successful people out there tend to read and read widely. And there's the hashtag everywhere, readers are leaders. But more important, I think people who read widely are able to take, you know, actually, I still have news feeds that I use. I also listen to podcasts. My commute to my office is an hour, so I spend time listening to podcasts. But I think what's really important is that wide perspective of, while I'm in the sales and marketing arena, it's an echo chamber full of people saying the same thing. So how do I find insight is by looking outside of sales and marketing and saying what things are happening outside that can influence or change what's going on inside sales and marketing. And rather than stick simply there, you know, I can talk a little bit about how recently we finished an analysis, a marketing analysis for a firm with a product or a service that's specifically designed to help companies increase the efficiency of their workflow. And they were the de facto standard in the 90s and the early 2000s, but they've been overshadowed a little. And essentially what had happened to them was they had kind of defined themselves in that arena and not looked outside and said, what other things are happening? How is mobile influencing the way workflow occurs inside organizations, and will that impact my organization? So there's just a little brief example of using the ability to look widely at a situation and understand how it impacts something you're working on.
Oh, that's great. And speaking of looking widely, you recently sent me an article about content marketing and editorial calendar planning, which is always important in content marketing. And some people are very, you know, hardcore about it and have their calendars built out for 6 months and really stick to it. But this article talked about building in a little room for nothing in your content calendar, which leaves room for creating better content and better idea flow. So when creating a content marketing calendar, should you think like Seinfeld, perhaps make a show about nothing and see what happens?
I think you need to do both. And let's talk a little bit about the goal, really, of what we're doing today and what companies attempt to do by blogging. It's really a long-term strategy. It's really about search engine optimization, search engine traction. And there are a couple of things to think about. Blogging on its own, for the sake of blogging, won't really get you search engine traction unless you understand what you're trying to position for and what it is that you want to do and who you want to attract. So the way to think about this from a higher level perspective is kind of a two-pronged approach. One is you've got to create pillar pages and a schedule. And essentially what a pillar page is a pillar page is a core concept. And for you, Matt, that might be public relations might be a core concept. What things are outside that we can talk about around public relations that point back towards that pillar page. Those are the kinds of things we can kind of map out and say, okay, we've got, you know, 3 months worth of content. Let's put up a post a week talking about the constituent pieces of public relations. But over here, there's this other prong. And that other prong is that because of social media, search engines love fresh, relevant content. And you being a PR guy, you know, there are lots of books out there about how you try to take something that's current and weave your story into it in order to gain traction and get attention. And that's exactly what kind of this serendipitous idea of not having a schedule is about. I want to make sure that I've set time aside to look around and say, what is, you know, if I go to Google Trends and I look within the services I'm providing and say, what's really interesting right now? What are people talking about? Great, I'm going to write about that. And maybe I attach that back to a pillar page. Maybe I don't. Maybe I just put it in a section that says, you know, my musings. But it provides a visitor an opportunity to see that you are thinking outside the box and that you are looking at things that help contribute to the success of a program or a product.
That's great. Yeah. And it totally frees you up from being completely locked in. Because if you're locked into a certain calendar, you could completely be missing a trend that you can tie your content into and lose a major opportunity there. And let's talk about, and we often talk about this a lot, and this is huge in digital marketing. And even on the PR side, we ought to be able to align sales and marketing teams. So tell us how or what advantages organizations can realize by better aligning their sales and marketing teams.
Well, I mean, I can start with a great benefit. So one of our clients recently realized a 300% uplift in their pipeline by doing this. Aligning a sales and marketing organization is more about understanding the engine and the process underneath sales and marketing than it is the challenges of the individuals in each organization. Yes, there will be cultural challenges with aligning sales and marketing. Roughly speaking, marketers, some still have a very creative view of the world. Others have a very data-driven view of the world. Part of the challenge of having a purely data-driven view of the world is that you don't have voice of customer, voice of buyer in your head well enough to understand the target. And interestingly enough, the sales team has got a better picture of voice of buyer, voice of customer that can be used tactically, but not necessarily strategically. Getting real marketing and sales alignment requires going out and talking to clients, prospects that were lost, and prospects that you're current about the direction their business is headed within the context of the product or service you provide. And then sitting back and listening to the answers. They're going to talk about their business challenges. That's the beginning of aligning marketing and sales. From there, you're talking about the more tactical items of what's a market qualified lead look like? How do I score that? What's a sales qualified lead look like? How do I set up my marketing automation platform? What are my buyer's journeys? But all of this starts with the voice of the buyer or customer and their journey. And their journey is never linear anymore, whether it's B2B or B2C, which I think we might talk about in a couple of minutes. It's not linear. They're all over the place. So it's not really easy to map it.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting too, and I don't know if we've talked about this, but I've seen more stuff out there about this, is that when, say, like in the B2B arena, if somebody's willing to buy something, say it's a large cloud computing system, it's not going to be done because of, oh, well, they clicked on a Google SEO link. They've already done their research. They've already know what they're looking at. You need to create content for sales that helps them bring it across the finish line. Would you agree with that?
You do, in a couple of ways. One is, I think that everyone listening would be well served to read the challenger sale and the challenger customer. One of the things that's happening in the marketplace is that a lot of businesses are saying, well, I can get my client to close business online. I'm going to take us down a little bit of a tangent here because I think it's important. B2B buyers want to resolve a problem 90% of the time. 10% of the time, they want to be included in a club. And if we flip that around and we say, so what about the B2C buyer? The B2C buyer wants inclusion 90% of the time and resolution 10% of the time. What do I mean by that, and what's the difference? Well, Matt, if you're driving a BMW, I want to drive a BMW, and that's an inclusion thing. That's something that, you know, that's a status symbol for me. But if my hot water heater went bad in my house, that's a resolution issue. So you can kind of see that from a B2C structure, that a lot of the buying that drives us is inclusion driven. But when we turn that around and we look at B2B, most of it is resolution driven. And the emotional levers behind a resolution sale are very different. The higher the stakes, or the more material the impact to the business, the more emotion goes into making that decision. And what I mean by emotion is, will you get promoted? Will you get fired? What are you most concerned about? When the stakes are high for a B2B buyer and there is a large amount of money on the table, no one is going to close a deal online. Although you've got a lot of technology companies out there right now saying, I bet I can get so-and-so to pay me $50,000 a year on a credit card on a monthly basis, and they'll close the entire deal online. This gets back to how far down the funnel do we think we can get a buyer to go before they want to speak to someone. Voice of the buyer and understanding the buyer tell us when those emotional levers come into play relative to the market and relative to the size of the deal. And that instructs us as to how to create a sales force that can respond to that need and at what point, and how to influence the content we're creating to make the phone ring.
Yeah, wow, that's a lot of great insights there. And it ties in perfectly to the next question, because we've talked about this a lot, that people like to buy from people who they like, who they trust. And that's a huge part, I think, especially in the B2B side, because you need that trust factor and it's the resolution thing like you were talking about. And if you don't mind, expand a little more on this concept and tell us more about how modern sales teams should adapt this approach.
Well, let's start with how modern companies should adopt this approach. So what's your brand promise? If I just asked a question to you and you're listening and you said, I have no idea, it's time that you take a moment and think about your brand promise. I suggest that you read a book called Brands and Bullshit. It's very brief, it's very precise, and it will help you get to at least formulating a brand promise. Now, what goes into a brand promise? Well, at OBO, we delight our customers with insights that lead to actionable results. And within that brand promise, we're able to extract the elements and describe them in a way that our staff members know what they need to do to make that brand promise work for our clients, from being self-starters and learning to making sure they're hitting checklists and delivering the best possible service they can. So what flows from there is, when we look at a marketplace, we say, from a sales perspective, how much revenue do I expect to generate in this space? But then the next question we ask is, what can our clients expect to see as a benefit from our service? So we're informing ourselves from both sides of the equation. If I simply, as a sales organization, look at what I'm doing as a quota, it's really easy to forget that the client is there and the client has a need. It's almost secondary. So you're right, people buy from people who they like. How do you get a genuine relationship built? You start with a quantifiable, qualifiable concern for your prospect that becomes part of your culture.
That's interesting. Great insights there. And let's shift real quick over to the future of digital marketing. We recently did a podcast with our friend and partner, Cindy Dumont. She's the CEO of True Blue Branding. And we talked about that Harvard Business Review article that you and I shared back and forth about AI, machine learning, and it's going to be a tremendous disruption. So from your perspective, the wise sage, where do you see digital marketing going? And will this AI thing really be that disruptive?
Let's start with, what's the difference between ML and AI, or machine learning and artificial intelligence? Marketers love throwing around the term artificial intelligence, but most of what we're seeing in the marketplace right now is machine learning. Machine learning is informed by rules. Artificial intelligence is systems that can create and modify their own rules on the fly. Where we're going to see initial differences, and we already are in companies like Funnel Envy that actually help organizations modify the content of their websites based on the profile of somebody who's landing on that website. So if I've got a cookie and I've got some background on who you are and you land on my website, I can change my entire content structure based on what I call your ideal client profile or your voice of buyer and say, you are a founder in a PR firm. What's important to you? If I'm targeting PR firms and you're a founder, then that content is going to speak to you. But there's a good sidebar here for a second that we glossed over and we didn't really talk about. And I'm going to back up and address it. Right now, everyone is trying to target the decision maker. The decision maker's mailbox and their attention span, they don't have time to look through all their mail. Their attention span is very short. We need to be paying attention to influencers. Decision makers are delegating the research of products down. And what we're not doing a good job of right now, and where machine learning helps, is saying, I recognize you. You're a second level manager position within this organization. These are possibly your roles and responsibilities. This is the lexicon of language you use. I understand that. Let me share my value proposition in a way that you will get it very clearly based on what you know and your view of how to solve this problem. That's where machine learning is coming in really handy right now. AI will change everything. AI will change everything from search outcomes to essentially getting people promoted through the funnel to close. What really will make the leap is when we combine predictive analytics and quantum computing. Those things, probably first quantum computer is 2025 to 2030. That will revolutionize everything. And as far as all of these things together, if you're a medium-sized firm and you aren't exploring how to use data analytics to inform your business decisions at this point, by 2021, 2022, your competitors are going to outflank you. The ones who are smaller, leaner startups who see the value in machine learning and analytics and are allowing it to inform how they go about reaching the market and what they do in the marketplace.
Yeah, and you know what? The reality is that is not that far off. The time moves very quickly in the business world. So those are great kind of parting comments there. And speaking of parting comments, Toby, is there anything else to add today? Anything we may have missed?
Yes, there is. We talked about, you know, people buying from people whom they like. People buy outcomes, especially in the business-to-business arena. They don't buy the past and they don't buy the present. They buy the future. They buy the picture of themselves with the problem solved, with either the promotion or the accolades that come with solving the problem. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges in B2B marketing today, is a lot of B2B marketers are stuck on recasting the problem or talking about the past when they lead into their content. And this comes from going to college. In college, you're a college graduate. You know what this challenge is. You're in the PR industry. You write a great deal. In college, we're learned to state our hypothesis first and make our point last. And the point is actually the future. So I've got to read the whole paper to get to the point. Well, if my phone's ringing and my email's full and my attention span is short, you need to get to the point and get to the point fast. We've all heard about, you know, you've got 3 to 5 seconds to get somebody's attention, right? There are two things that happen when somebody lands your website or sees your digital presence. They already know what they want or close to it, and you better be talking about the future, not the past. Otherwise, they're simply going to swipe left and move on.
Absolutely. That's great, Toby. What an amazing way to end this podcast. I've never really thought about it from that perspective, and that just upends everything. And wow, that was awesome. And to close this one out, you just heard an exclusive L&R Communications podcast series with Mr. Toby Bray, who is currently a sales and marketing advisor for the OBO agency. And as we discussed at the top of the interview here, Toby is one of the smartest people we know in digital marketing. I think he proved that today beyond a doubt with some of these great insights that he shared on the podcast with us. And Toby, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome.